All right, good morning. Well, since we left off, Lamed Hey Amud Beis. Lamed Hey Amud Beis Gufa. Gufa, Amra Vihuda Mershmolachin, Amra Bitzchok, Amra Biochanan. Shemen Zayis Mevarchin Allah Bray Praise. Remember again, the Gemara quoted in the Brisa yesterday that when it comes to olive oil, the brach we make on olive oil is Bray Praise. So the Gemara says, Hey Chidami, what's the case of where you are, of where you are drinking olive oil? So if you're telling me that you're just drinking straight olive oil, so that can't be. Why? Because drinking straight olive oil is actually physically harmful. Because the Braisa said that if one drinks shemen of truma, right, a sacrificial item that belongs to the kohen, then what? Or consecrated item, as you call it. If one drinks oil of truma, so one pays the principal but does not pay the extra fifth. But I'm also saying, under normal circumstances, if you go ahead and benefit from something that is Kohanic property, you have to pay principal plus a penalty fifth. But the penalty fifth is limited to cases where you are deriving some kind of hana, some kind of benefit from the item which you used. So the Gemara says, for example, over here, if you were to drink oil of truma, you would pay the principal and not the additional penalty fifth, which would indicate what? That you are not receiving any kind of real benefit, hana, when you drink the oil. However, hasach shemen shel truma, if one anoints themselves, one shmears themselves with oil of truma, which is considered to be a normative benefit, then meshalim esakar mena meshalim esachomesh. Excuse me, umeshalim esachomesh. Then you pay principal as well as the additional fifth as well. So therefore, Rabbi said the Gemara just demonstrated that drinking oil is not considered to be a normative way of enjoying the oil. If that's the case, then why would the Braisa rule that you would be saying a Bray Prayer 8 on the oil? To which the Gemara says, no. Elodika Ochele Ali De Pas. What's the case? The case is where you're eating the olive oil with bread. So we'll say, we'll explore this a little bit more. The pashlus, what that would mean is, how are you drinking the oil? You're dipping the bread in the oil, and you're eating the bread. So you're eating the oil through the bread, or eating the oil together with the bread. Either way, the Gemara says, Ihochi, havile pas ikr, v'hutafel utnan, zeaklal, kol shu ikr v'imot filim, avarech ala ikr v'polter satfila. The Gemara says, that can't be, because we'll get into these halachas a little bit later on, because of ikr and tafel. The concept of ikr and tafel says that if you have two foods that you are eating, one is primary, one is secondary, you make the bracha on the primary food, and that exempts the secondary food. So if you are eating olive oil with bread, bread by definition is always primary, which would then mean what? You would make the bracha on the bread, and that would exempt the olive oil. So that can't be the case of making a Bray Priya Eitz on olive oil. And that the Gemara says, Ella, the kashasile ayede anigron. Oh, so what are you doing? You're drinking olive oil together with anigron. What's anigron? Rashi says, excuse me, the Gemara says, the Amar Rabba Bar Shmuel, anigron, maya de silka. So anigron is water in which beets were cooked, right? I guess borscht, but very liquidy borscht. It was always a crowd pleaser, even in the times of the Talmud. So now you're drinking. So how are you drinking olive oil? So what would happen is people would go ahead and pour the olive oil in large quantity into the anigron. It's the anigron. So the point of the anigron in this case was only what? To allow you to get down the oil. Right? The idea is you didn't really want the anigron, but the anigron was palatable enough that it allowed you to drink the oil. The Gemara says, and sigoron. Now it's interesting. The hagos with tziyunim. I don't know if everybody has it on the side of their gemara, but some change this word of anis an sigoron to oxigoron. Oxigoron. Okay. Either way, oxigoron. Oxy. Bless you. So oxigoron is maya top of lamidvav maya the kulu shalki. When you see the word oxigoron, same thing, is essentially like a vegetable broth. It's water in which vegetables were cooked. Okay. So the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, we're still back to the same issue, which is imkain havile anigoron iker v'shemetafel. But still, the borscht, right? The beet juice is still going to be the ikr, the primary item, and the shemen will still be the secondary item. In which case, I'm going back to what we said before. Utnan zakla kol shu ikr v'motvim avarech al ikr pol desat tefila. If that's the case, then when you have a bracha, you have a situation of primary and secondary item. You make a bracha on the primary item that exempts the secondary item. To which the Gemara says, "Hacha b'mayaskinon." What are we dealing with over here? Bechoshesh bigrono. This is very interesting. Choshesh bigrono means one has some kind of throat ailment. It could just be a sore throat. And I will say, what was the common remedy for sore throats in the times of the Gemara? Olive oil. Olive oil. So Rashi points out over here, choshesh bigrono, v'tzarech lo seis bo shemen harbe, to havile shemen ikar v'anigoron tofel. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. What's interesting is, so now you need the olive oil, but the truth is people don't normally drink olive oil. So what would you do? You would mix in a large quantity of olive oil with the anigoron in order to get the oil down. But ultimately, it was not the anigoron that was the ikar, it was the olive oil that was the ikar. So the Gemara says, desanya, ha-choshesh bigrono, if someone has a throat ailment, lo hiya arenu b'shemen tchila b'shabbos. So we'll say, the Gemara now is talking about over here, or the Rice is talking about over here, the issue of refuah on Shabbos. One is not permitted, this is, we'll deal with this in Masechet Shabbos, but just quickly, one is not permitted to engage in medicinal remedies on Shabbos. Chazal outlawed that for fear of the fear that one may come to grind medicines, right? To crush, right? Because ultimately, schika samimonim, that's how they made medicines. So how that gzera applies today, we'll leave from a Masechet Shabbos. But the point is, therefore, you're not permitted to engage in medicinal remedies that don't even involve the crushing of the ingredients. So therefore, the Gemara Shabbos says like this. So now I have a situation where I have a bad sore throat, right? I have a throat ailment. I need to go ahead and gargle essentially with olive oil. So the Gemara says, well, you can't gargle with the oil straight. Why? Because that is a straight out medical remedy. Can't do that on Shabbos. So what do I do? But what can I do? I can mix in a lot of oil with anigoron, with this borscht water, beet water, and I could swallow it like that. So the Gemara says, so therefore, I will say the Gemara now wants to suggest that that's the case where I will make a Brei Priya 8 on the oil. Because even though, because the anigaron is not the ikar, the anigaron is the tafel, because it's only being used to allow me to get down the oil is ultimately what I want, and therefore I make a Brei Priya 8. Well, here it happens to me that you're using a lot. Absolutely, but technically it should not matter. Correct. So the Gemara says, Pshita, okay, if that's the way you're setting it up, then that's obvious. Of course you're going to make a Brei Priya 8. So the Gemara says, no, it's not so obvious. You know why? Ma'u detainba, this is very interesting, I might have thought that, remember, why are you eating the shemen over here? You're not eating it because you want shemen zayis. Why are you eating it? For medicinal purposes. This is medicine. I might have thought that maybe you don't make a bracha on medicine. What do you make a bracha? You make a bracha on food. You don't make a bracha on medicine, even if it happens to be that the medicine that you're taking is what? Is a food item. Therefore, the Gemara says, Kamash malon, kevan de isle hana'a mine bo'i bruche. Therefore, the Gemara says, since you get hana'a from this particular food, even though your motivation is medicinal in nature, you will make a bracha. So, as I Tosis points out over here, and the Tosis actually right across, kevan de isle hana'a mine, Tosis points out the following. He says, just take a look at it quickly. So Tosa says, this teaches us a very important concept, that food items that are taken for medicinal purposes, if the food item has a pleasant taste, has some kind of good taste to it, then even if halacha lemaisa, I'm only taking it for medicinal purposes, not for food purposes, I still make a bracha. But if it has a bad taste to it, I would not make a bracha. So you know where this comes up? So let's say a person is drinking a cup of tea. I normally don't drink tea. The only reason I'm drinking tea is because I have a sore throat. The halacha is what? That I make a bracha on that. Obviously, we'll get more into the topic of medicines in a different sugya in the Gemara, but the point the Gemara is making over here is that even items taken for pure medicinal purposes, if there is a positive taste benefit associated with it, halacha lemaisa, make a bracha on it. So water will be a little bit different. We'll talk about water, because water, if you're only doing it to get down the pill, right, then halacha lemaisa, you don't make a bracha on it. If a person happens to be thirsty, I'll tell you where it comes up. Let's say not water. Let's say I'm taking orange juice. I'm using orange juice to wash down the pill. So in that case, you would make a bracha. Why? Because even though I'm not thirsty, there is taste benefit associated with that, and therefore that gets a shahakal. So the Gemara says like this, Kimcha dechiti. So we'll say, obviously this is the part that deals with bracha, so we're going to deal with a couple of obscure brachos cases. So let's say one eats wheat flour. Now, Tosas again points out, it can't really be wheat flour because no one eats wheat flour. So Tosas wants to point out that it's probably talking about, let's say, parched grain. Parched grain. Okay, but straight reading is Kimcha Dechiti. Rav Yehuda Omer Bripi Adama. Rav Yehuda says you make Hadama. Rav Nachman Omer Shakol Niyabidvaro. Rav Nachman says Shahakol. Omer Le Rav Al Rav Nachman Lo Tiflog Ale De Rav Yehuda. Don't argue with Rav Yehuda who holds Bripi Adama. The Rav Yochanan Ushmuel Kaimi Kavase. Because Rav Yochanan and Shmuel hold like him. The Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel. V'chin Omer Rav Yitzchak Omer Rav Yochanan. Shemen Zayis Mivarchin Alav Brei Priya Eitz. You make a Brei Priya Eitz on olive oil. Alma, what do we see from that? Afal Gav Di Ishtani, even though it's changed form, right? Meaning it's gone from being an olive to ultimately being olive oil. B'milsei Koi. It retains its status. So the olive was Ha'eitz, and now the oil is going to be Ha'eitz. Hachanami, we could say the same thing by the wheat flour. Afal Gav Di Ishtani, even though now it's changed form, Bemil Sekoi, it nevertheless remains in its state and therefore gets the bracha of Borei Pri Ha'adama. Borei Pri Ha'adama. Fine. So the Gemara says, 1 second, me dummy, how can you compare that? Hasam Leslei Iluya Achrina. In the case of the olive oil, so the oil has now become all it's going to become. There is no heightened state for the olive oil. Hacha Isle Iluya Achrina Bepas. But over here in the case of the flour, there is another heightened state, namely what? You can take the flour and bake it into bread. So the Gemara says, 1 second. Vichi Isle Iluya Achrina Lomavarchina and Ale Bre Priadama. Is that to say that if something doesn't have another heightened state, we just simply make a Repri Adama on it? Excuse me. Loma Varchina Repri Adama Ela Shahakol. Vahama Rabbi Zeir Amra Masna Amra of Shmuel. Akra Chaya Vikimcha Disari. Mevarchin Alayu Shahakol Niabidvaro. But yet we learned that Kra. So we'll say, interestingly enough, I don't know if Rashi translates it over here. Now, so kra is normally translated either as gourd or pumpkin, which is, I said, I'm guessing they're still in the same family. Normally we go with gourd. So on a raw gourd, bikimcha desari, or barley flour, mevarchinan alayo shakol niyabidvaro. The bracha shahakol. So the Gemara says, my love, dechiti brei pri adama. Now, interestingly enough, the Brice only brought down the case of barley flour, which would seem to indicate to us that wheat flour is still brei pri adama. So the Gemara says, no. Dechiti nam shahakol niyabidvaro. Chitim is also shahakol. So the Gemara says, velishma inan dechiti vekol shekin sari. But I don't understand. Then let the Brice teach me about wheat flour. And whatever would have applied to wheat flour would have certainly applied to barley flour. So you're able to say barley flour is, you know, it's interesting that all of these things that we consider to be, you know, like the health foods today, the high-end premium stuff, Chazal considered to be the lowest of the low, right? No one was eating whole wheat bread. Paupers ate whole wheat bread. Right? So he's saying over here that if you go ahead, so barley was also considered to be very inferior grain. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Just if you tell me that wheat flour gets a Ha'adama, then of course I would have understood that, if you would have told me that wheat flour would have gotten a shahakol, then all the more so barley flour would have also. To which the Gemara says, no. Hava mina hani mili dechiti, yashmo inan dechiti. If the Braisa would have just told me wheat flour, hava amina hani mili dechiti, I would have said that only applies to wheat flour, because it's higher grade. Aval desa'ari lo levarich alea klau. I might have thought that barley flour is so inferior that it doesn't get any bracha. Kamashmalan, not the case. Kamashmalan, that it gets a shahakol. Okay. Umi garami melach vizamis. But how can you say that the havamina is that you wouldn't make any bracha on barley flour? After all, is it any worse than salt and brine? Disnan ala melach va'ala zamis mavarech shahakol niyeb dvaro. But yet we learn that on salt and on brine, you make the bracha of shahakol. So if you're making bracha of shahakol on these we'll call it lowly items, then of course you're going to be going and making a shahakol on barley flour as well. So the Gemara says, no, it's trich sakadait chamina melach v'zamis avid inish deshadi lepumei. See, here's the difference. It's not uncommon for a person to put a little bit of salt or a little bit of brine in their mouth. That's not an uncommon thing. A person puts a little bit of salt, a little bit of brine, as either before they eat something, after they eat something. Aval kimcha disari, when it comes to barley flour, But since everyone knows that barley flour is problematic for kukiani, kukiani are intestinal worms. So everyone knows that halacha l'maisa barley flour is difficult for that, or meaning might be a primary cause of that. Lo levarich aleh klal. I'm not afraid you shouldn't make a bracha at all. Kamash malan kevan de isle hanna amine bay bruchei. Therefore, the Gemara teaches us to know that kamash malan, even though it might have this negative medical or health detrimental effect, nevertheless, we still make a bracha of shahakal on it. Fine. We're not finished yet with the wheat flour. We're gonna still close off with it. So the Gemara says this Korah. So what about Korah? So take a look at Rashi here for just a moment. Rashi says Korah rach shel dekel. This refers to the soft branches of a palm tree. So Rashi goes on. He says kisha anafav gedelim b'chol shana v'shana kederach kol ha'ilanos hanosaf b'shana zu rach u'b'shana shnia miskasha v'naseis. So apparently on a palm tree, the new shoots that grow, in the first year that they grow, they're soft and actually edible. And in the second year is when they become hard, wood-like. So the Gemara now says, so what happens if you're going to eat the soft branch of the palm tree? Korah, Rav Yehuda Omer, Bar Pri Adama, Hadama, Ushmuel Omer, Shahakol Nihye Bidvaro. Rav Yehuda Omer, Bar Pri Adama, why? Perehu, because Rav Yehuda says, look, It's a fruit of the tree. Now, obviously, it's not literally a fruit of the tree because you're not going to say how eats. But meaning, the point is, it's an edible part of the tree. It's a pre of the tree, and therefore it gets very pre adama. Ushmuel amar shakol niya bidvaro hoil v'sofo lahakshos. Shmuel, on the other hand, says no. It gets a shahakol. Why? Because at the end of the day, what's going to happen to it? It's going to turn hard and inedible. So Shmuel essentially saying is, you can't call this a pre, because at the end of the day, it's going to leave its food state and become a part of the tree. Therefore, if you eat it, it's not totally abnormal, but it still gets a shahakol. Amalei Shmuel Rav Yehuda. So Shmuel says Rav Yehuda, Shinina. Sharp one. That's a compliment, right? That's the way Talmidei Chum refer to each other. Sharp one. Kavasach mistabra. It appears to be quite clear that halacha follows you. I mean, remember, Yehuda is the one who said that a brei pri adama. The hot's known sofo lahakshos, because if you look at the case of the radish, right? So a radish, if you don't go ahead and pull it out of the ground at the right time, it goes ahead and hardens. So when it comes to a radish, which if left alone will harden, umivarchin alei brei pri adama, right? And yet what? We say brei pri adama on a radish, which would seem to indicate what? Even if something is ultimately going to harden, as long as you eat it now in its edible state, it gets a brei pri adama, which would seem to point to the fact that the korah, right, the soft branch of the palm tree, should also get a brei pri adama, even though it's going to harden. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Velohi, that's not a good comparison. Tznon, nati inish adaita de pugla. Dikla, lo nati inish adaita de kura. It's apples and oranges, or it's palm trees and radishes. You know, meaning the idea is that when it comes to the palm tree, when it comes to the radish, excuse me, the reason it's planted is that it should be eaten in its soft state. When people plant a palm tree, no one really plants it with the intention that people are going to eat the korah, the soft shoots. Again, if people eat it, they eat it, but that's not the essence of the palm tree. So the Gemara says we have to look at the kavana for which the actual item was planted. So the pugla was planted in order to eat it in this soft state. Yes, therefore it gets a brei pri adama. But the palm tree was not planted in order for people to eat the shoots, even though the shoots are edible, and therefore if you choose to eat it, it only gets a shahakol. So the Gemara says, 1 second, is that true? V'chol heicha delo nati inchi adaita dehochi lo mevarchinan alei. Are you telling me then that whenever a person doesn't plant an item for a particular purpose, that it doesn't get its designated bracha, will only get the shahakol? Which is another way of saying, are you trying to tell me that anytime you eat something in a way that goes against the intention for which it was originally planted, the item doesn't get its real bracha, but only gets a shahakol? Baharit slaf. I will say, now we're going to spend a lot of time over here speaking about the tzlaf. So Rashi points out tzlaf is min eitz. So tzlaf is actually what we call today a caper bush. I'll tell you something very interesting. So whenever I've learned this particular parak and brachos, I don't know how many people have ever seen a caper bush. So when I was in Eretz Yisrael this past summer, so we went to a nature reserve. And amazingly enough, so I saw a caper bush. Caper bush filled with caper berries. So I got very excited. The guide said to me, he said, you really don't get out a lot. If this, right? I've never seen someone get so excited about a kippur bush. I said, you have to understand, the Gemara spends a lot of time on kippur bushes. And when you'll see also, the Gemara goes into great details about the kippur berries. And it was amazing to see. It's not amazing to see, it's obvious, but just the way they described it, obviously, is the way just it's sitting right there in Eretz Yisrael. I'm sorry?
Rashi,
I don't know. I don't know where they're indigenous. I'm not sure exactly where they grow. I'm sorry? South of France. All right, there you go. So the gross is like this. So the gross is a hard slav. The naughty inish adaita de parcha. So we'll say, look, when it comes to a slav, right? So when it comes to a caper bush, where people planted adaita de parcha. Adaita de parcha literally means for the pre. For the pre, right? People plant a caper bush for the caper berry. Utsinan, and we learned, the Mishnah says, Amine nitzpa. On all of the things that grow from a caper bush. What are all the things that grow from the caper bush? Ala olin, the leaves. Ala tamaros. Tamaros refers that the leaves themselves put out like these date-like growths. It's not the fruit. But the growth itself looks like a date, and it's edible. Omer brei pri adama. So on the leaves and on the date-like growths, you say brei pri adama. Va'ala ha'evyonos, va'ala kafrisin. Omer Bori Priya Aids. And on the Evyonos is the actual name of the caper berry. On the berry and on the kafrisin are the husks or the shell of the berry, you make a bore periha eight. So also with the Mishnah saying over here is like this. There are many edible parts of the bush, but anything other than the fruit gets a hadama, and it's only the fruit and its shell and its husk that get a bore periha eight. Amra nachar by Yitzchak, tzlaf, noti in. So I will say, so the point over here is what? The Gemara is saying, what do you see from here? The assumption over here is that when a person plants a caper bush, they're planting it for the caper berries, which would then mean, according to the logic that Gemara just espoused before, if you eat the leaves or you eat the date-like protrusions, you should get a shahakal. Because the Gemara just wanted to suggest that halacha lemaaseh, anytime you eat something that you did not plant the item for, it only gets a shahakal. But yet, what did the Mishnah just say? If you eat the other items on the bush, it gets a hadama. So the Gemara says, you see from here, that's what? That even if you eat parts of the plant for which it was not planted, nevertheless, the item still gets its regular bracha, like hadama. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak tzlaf nati inshi adaita deshusa. It's not true. When a person plants a caper bush, a person can't plant a caper bush for everything, right? The intention is to eat everything. Dikla lo nati inshi adaita dekura. However, when a person plants a palm tree, the palm tree is really not planted with the intention of eating the shoots, even though they actually are edible.
It's a palm, though. That's the same thing that you fly in a can.
Yeah, you can do today.
Yeah,
that's the shoots. Yeah,
palm,
correct.
Could be planted for that today.
Correct. So we'll get into the discussions that ultimately there are different kavanas. If obviously people are planting it for that purpose, then the halacha is totally different. The Gemara is working with the people are planting palm trees for dates. That's really why they're planting them for. So the Gemara says, "Va'af agav de kalsi shmuel rabbi Yehuda hilchasa kavase de shmuel." And even though Shmuel praised Rav Yehuda, the halacha actually follows Shmuel, which means that halacha l'maaseh also on the palm shoot, one would make a shahakol, because at the end of the day, that is not the purpose for which the palm itself was actually planted, and therefore halacha l'maaseh only gets a shahakol. Amar Rav Yehuda Morav, tzlaf. Now we're going to get into tzlaf a little bit more. Tzlaf shel orla b'chutz la'aretz. If you have a tzlaf of orla, now remember again, go back to what we said yesterday. So orla represents the fruits of the first 3 years that are not permitted, that are prohibited for consumption. So if you have a tzlaf, a caper bush of orla outside of Eretz Yisrael, so what do? Zorik esavionos, you throw away the pre because you can't eat the pre. Va'ochel esakafrisin, and you can eat the shells. Right, you can eat the husk. The member of the Avionos Peri, the Kafrisin La Peri, is that to say that it's only the fruit that is considered fruit, but the shell, the husk, is not considered fruit? Or minu, here's a question. Amine nitzba, when it comes to everything that grows in the caper bush, ala olim v'ala tomorrows, on the leaves and on the date-like growths, omer bre priya dama, v'ala Avionos v'ala Kafrisin, omer bre priya eitz. So here we see that what? The Mishnah explicitly says that on the fruits and on the shells, you go ahead and you say Brei Priya Eitz, which indicates to us what? That the shells or the husks are actually considered to be fruit as well. So the Gemara says, Hu d'amak Rabbi Kiva. He passed like Rabbi Kiva. This time, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Tzlaf Mis Asher, or Miss Aser, I should say, Miss Aser tomorrow's ve'evyonos ve'kafrisin. Rabbi Eliezer says, when you take meiser from a tzlaf, you can take meiser from the date-like protrusions, from the fruits or from the husks. Meaning, according to Rabbi Eliezer, those are all considered to be fruit. Rabbi Kiva omer ein Miss Aser ele evyonos bilvad mipnei shehu pri. Rabbi Kiva, on the other hand, holds that no, you can only take meiser from the actual fruits because that's the only real fruit. So the Gemara is therefore suggesting that when Rabbi Huda said in the name of Rav that if you have a tzlaf of Orla, that you're allowed to go ahead and eat the husks, you just have to throw away the pre. That's reflecting the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who holds that it's only the pre that's a pre, and everything else is considered to be bush and not pre. So the Gemara says, "V'neim halacha k'Rabbi Akiva." So why don't you just keep it easier and just say the halacha follows Rabbi Akiva? Why do you have to go through this entire convoluted discussion? So the Gemara says, "No. E amar halacha k'Rabbi Akiva, haba amina afilu ba'aretz." So because if the Gemara would have just said that the halacha follows Rabbi Akiva, I might have thought that is true even in Eretz Yisrael. Kamash Malan, no. Because remember, what's the case over here? The case over here is where we're dealing with Arla in Chutz La'aretz. Kamash Malan, kol ha-mekel ba'aretz, halacha kemoso b'chutz la'aretz. Therefore, the Gemara is coming to teach us that, no, whoever is mekel in Eretz Yisrael, the halacha doesn't follow in Eretz Yisrael, but the halacha does follow him in Chutz La'aretz. Ava ba'aretz lo. Not in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, I will say, Rabbi Akiva actually paskin this for Eretz Yisrael as well. That halacha l'maisa is only the pri that's considered to be the fruit, and therefore only the pri that's governed by Arla and governed by Meiser. So the Gemara says, we see from here that we reject Rabbi Akiva's opinion in Eretz Yisrael. For Eretz Yisrael purposes, for Arla and Meiser purposes, the entire bush is considered to be like the pri. But in Chutz La'aretz, we always adopt the more lenient opinion, also having to do with the fact that Arla's Chutz La'aretz is only Dirabanan. Right? So because Arla and Chutz La'aretz is Dirabanan, we could adopt a more lenient opinion. So the Gemara says, well, why don't you just say the name Halach Rabbi Kiva b'Chutz La'aretz, the Chalamekel b'Aretz, Halach Kmosa b'Chutz La'aretz. So why don't you just say that the Halacha follows Rabbi Kiva in Chutz La'aretz, because whoever is Mekel in Eretz Yisrael, even though the Halacha doesn't follow in Eretz Yisrael, does follow in Chutz La'aretz. E Amar Hachi, Hava Amina Hanini Gabi Meiser Ilan. The be'eretz gufa midrabanan, aval gabe orla the be'eretz midaraisa, ema b'chutz la'aretz nami nikzar. Because otherwise, I might have thought that the only reason we're being makel in this case over here is why? Because you're dealing with meiser of the tree. But also remember, midaraisa, the only things you're obligated to take meiser from is your wheat, your grapes, and your olives. Everything else is midrabanan. So I might have thought the reason we're being makel over here is because you're dealing with meiser midrabanan, right? However, when it comes to Arla, that is da'oraisa, I should even be machmir on that in Chutz La'aretz, even though Chutz La'aretz is midrabanan, to which the Gemara says, kamash v'lan, that's not the case. Okay. Ravina ashkeche lemar baravashi dekazorik evyonos v'ka'achol kafisin. Ravina found mar baravashi who was eating the fruit, who was throwing away the fruit and eating the husk. Throwing away the fruit and eating the husk. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amarle, my daitech, wait, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? So the Gemara says, okay, good. My daitech, Rabbi Akiva, the Mekel. So it must be that you're paskening like Rabbi Akiva, and you're being Mekel. So also, so Bapasha is dealing with an Arla case. So it was an Arla caper bush, and he was eating the husk and throwing away the pre. So why are you doing this? It must be that you pass like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's position was that the only thing that's actually called the fruit is the actual fruit. Everything else is called the bush, and if Halacha L'maaseh, it would not be governed by the Arla restrictions. To which the Gemara says, "V'li Avid Marke Beis Shammai D'Makilei Tvei." But he says to him, "Why don't you pass like Beis Shammai? Because they're even more Mekel. Because what does Beis Shammai say? Disnan." Tzlaf Beis Shammai Omrim Kiloim Bekerem. So interestingly enough, Beis Shammai holds that a tzlaf, a caper bush, is considered to be Kloya Kerem. Now what's Kloya Kerem? Kloya Kerem says that you are not permitted to plant a vegetable, right, or a grain within a vineyard. That's the halacha. It's interesting enough, Beis Shammai says that based on that, you would not be permitted to go ahead and plant a caper bush, a tzlaf, within a vineyard, which tells us that a caper bush is going to be one of two things. Either it's a grain or it's a vegetable. It's certainly not a grain. So therefore, Beis Shammai must hold that the caper bush has the status of a vegetable, and therefore, halacha l'maisa may not be planted in the vineyard. Ubeis Hillel omrim, ein kelayim bekerem. Beis Hillel, on the other hand, hold no, that that's not called klaya kerem. Ve'elu ve'elu modim shechayiv ba'arla. But both agree that's what? That the caper bush is chayiv in arla. So the Gemara says, well, that's contradictory. Haguf akasha. Omrit tzlaf Beis Shammai omrim kelayim bekerem, ama min yereku. So if Beis Shammai holds that you can't plant the caper bush in the vineyard, that means that they hold the caper bush is a vegetable, right? If that's the case, but then what do you do with the fact that they say it's obligated in Arla? Arla only governs what? It's only applicable to fruit trees. So which one is it? Halokasha, it's not a kasha. Beis Shammai sapuki misafkelu. Beis Shammai is misupuk about the status of the tzlaf, and therefore of the hacha luchumra v'hacha luchumra, and therefore they deal in both cases luchumra. They won't let you plant it in the vineyard for fear that it's a vegetable, but they will make you chayiv in arla, right, for fear that it's really a fruit tree. To which the Gemara says, Mikomakom lebeis Shammai havi le safek arla. But nevertheless, what it comes down to is, according to Beis Shammai, the caper bush is what? Safek arla. Utnan, and we learned, safek arla be'eretz Yisrael aser. So if you have a safek arla in Eretz Yisrael, that's aser. However, besurya mutter, in Surya, Surya Rabosai is actually Syria. Surya refers to the area that was annexed by David HaMelech, right? David HaMelech fought many successful military battles, and he enlarged the borders of Eretz Yisrael to a large degree, but there's a fundamental machlokes about the nature and status of those land that David HaMelech annexed. Since David HaMelech did not ask the permission of the Sanhedrin, right? It did not consult the Urim Thummim before going out to these wars, so there's a shayla if these lands have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael or not. So for different purposes, they're treated in different ways. So for example, the Gemara says over here that if you have a Safek Arla in Surya, it's Mutter. It's Mutter. And in Chutz La'aretz, in Vaday Chutz La'aretz, what happens? Yored V'lokeach V'lvad Shalo Yirena Locate. In Chutz La'aretz, you know what you can do? You could even go down to a field where you know for sure that sounds strange. You know for sure there's Safek Arla, right? And as long as what? Here, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, last Rashi on the previous staff, Yorid v'lokeach heimenu afapisha safeku im yavi minanatios. So meaning, even if you happen to know that there is the arla in that particular field, right, safek arla in that particular field, as long as you don't see the farmer picking those fruits for you, you're permitted to go down to that field and buy produce. So in Eretz Yisrael, Safek Arla is Aser. In Surya, it's Mutter. In Chutz La'aretz, it's even more than Mutter. You can even go and buy produce from the field that has the Safek Arla, as long as what? As long as you don't see the farmer actually giving you from those very fruits that are Safek Arla. Okay? So the Gemara says, so we'll say the point over here is to remember how this whole story got started. This was all that Ravina found Mar Barav Ashi throwing away the fruit and eating the husk. So he said to Mar Barav Ashi, you can even eat the fruit. Why? You should be make like Beis Shammai. Because what it comes down to is that Safek Arla in Chutz La'aretz is Mutter. So now the caper bush is, like Beis Shammai says, a Safek Arla. And therefore you should even be permitted to what? To go ahead and eat the berries themselves. So the Gemara says no. Rabbi Akiva b'makom b'mkom Rabbi Eliezer avdinan kavase. So the Gemara says, you know what? When Rabbi Akiva disputes Rabbi Eliezer, we could pass him like Rabbi Akiva. However, Beis Shammai b'mkom Beis Hillel eino mishnah. But when Beis Shammai disputes Beis Hillel, we do not paskin like Beis Shammai. So therefore, the Gemara essentially says that we reject the notion of Beis Shammai that the tzlaf is considered to be safek arla. We adopt the position of Beis Hillel, namely that tzlaf is not a vegetable; that tzlaf is a bona fide tree, fruit tree, and if halacha l'maaseh, there'd be no problem to plant it in the kerem. But it's also subject to the laws of arla. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, but there's another issue over here, that the truth is the husk should be usser for the simple reason that it is considered to be the guardian of the pri, shomer the pri. It's the shomer, it's the guardian is the wrong word. Okay, it's what? Huh? It protects the it protects the pri. And the halacha is v'rachmana amar v'araltem arlaso es piryo es hatofel the pri. So the Gemara darshins. The pasuk says that you will go ahead and have this concept of arla, and what will arla apply to? Va'araltem arla so es piryo. Now, also, whenever we see the word es always comes lerabos. Es comes to include something additional. So, what does es piryo come to include? Then, not only is the pri subject to the laws of arla, but anything that protects the pri is also subject to the laws of arla, namely the husk and the shell as well. Umainihu, what is this? What is this thing that is attached to the pri? So the Gemara says, Umainihu, shomer the pri. That refers to the husk or to the shell. So therefore, again, Abba says, halacha lemaisa. The Gemara is now questioning this idea. Up until now, we've kind of taken it for granted that in the tzlath, you could go ahead and throw away the pri, because that's the arla, right? And you could eat the husk. So the Gemara says, I don't understand why that's true. The husk or the shell should have the same status as the pri itself, because the es comes to include that which comes to protect the pri. Amarava, hecha aminan dinas shomer the pri. When do we say that the husk or the shell becomes the shomer for the pri? Hecha di isei bein betalosh bein mechuber. That's when the husk or the shell remains on the pri, both when the pri is on the tree as well as when it's off the tree. Hacha bein mechuber isei betalosh leisei. So apparently, when it comes to the caper bush, the kafris, the shell, only stays on while the pri is attached, but ultimately falls off when the pri is detached. Therefore, halachically, it doesn't have the status of shomer the pri, and therefore it's not governed by the laws of our law. Esrei Abayis. Abayi raises a question. He says the following. Pitma shel rimon. So pitma shel rimon literally means like the pitum of the rimon, but it doesn't mean a pitum like by an esrog. Rashi points out, haperach sheberosho. It refers to the little flower that's on top of the pomegranate. Mitzarefes. Mitzarefes means like this, Rabosai. Now, the Gemara switching gears for just a moment. The halacha is that by ochlin, in order for food to go ahead and be makabel tuma, so a food must have a certain shear. It has to be a kibetz. It has to be the size at least of an egg. So the Gemara says, when evaluating the size of the rimon of the pomegranate, we can include the flower, we can include the top flower in assessing the shear, and assessing the size. The hanet shelo, similarly, we could also include the nates. The nates, Rashi says, is the protective shell. Rashi says, nates perimon ki kafras be'evyonos. So you can include the little flower on top, and what? And the shell, the really what it means in this case is the skin, it's the rind, right? The skin around it as well. So the Gemara says the following. Pitma shel rimon mitztarefes, excuse me, I didn't read the finish line. V'hanet shel in mitztaref. But the rind is not included in calculating the size of the rimon. So the Gemara says, "Midikamar hanetshel ina mitzdarif ama d'lavochahu." From the fact that the Gemara says over here that the shell, the rind, is not included in assessing the size of the rimon, indicates that what? That the protective outer shell is in fact not considered food. So the Gemara says, "V'tani gabe arla," and yet we learn when it comes to arla, klipe rimon, the outside shell of the pomegranate, again the rind, the hanetz shalo, and the flower. Similarly, klipe egozim, right? The shells of nuts, the hagarinen, and the pits of fruit, chayavin ba'arla, are all subject to the laws of arla. So the Gemara says, you see from here that what? That the rind is considered to be part of the fruit because it's subject to the laws of arla. So the Gemara says, ela amirava hecha aminan dinasalu shomer lepri. Hecha de isa bishas gemar peira. So Rashi says, you're right. When do we say that an item is considered to be a shomer for the pri? That's only when it's there at the time when the pri itself finishes maturing. Hai kafris leise bishas gemar peira. But you know what? At the end of the day, the shell or the husk of the caper berry is not there at the time that the berry matures. So the Gemara says, really? Imi v'ha'amar av nachem amar baravua. Hani mascholi de arla asiri. So look at Rashi for just a moment, Rabbi Osai. Mascholi de arla, Rashi says, bitamri kikafras bitzlaf. So mascholi apparently is like the protective shell around dates. So right, I guess when the dates originally grow, there's some kind of protective shell around them. So this we'll call it the shell of the dates. Asiri, our usher. Hoil v'na'asu shomer lepri. Since they become a protective shell for the pri, v'shomer lepri emas havi. And ultimately, when do the dates have this protective shell? Bikufra, only in the kufra stage. Rashi points out, what's the kufra? Kishatmarim kitanim kodim bishulam. The dates only have this protective shell when they're in the early stages of their growth. But apparently, as they mature more, the protective shell falls off. Vikakari they shomer lepri. And what do we see from here? That despite the fact that the protective shell only remains on the dates, at the time when the dates are very young and underdeveloped, yet they're still called what? They're still called a shomer lepri, and therefore are still accorded the same treatment as the pri. Rav Nachman Sovel like Rabbi Yossi. So Rav Nachman holds like Rabbi Yossi. This is not Rabbi Yossi Omer. Smadar Osir Mipnei Shehu Pri. Rabbi Yossi holds that Smadar is Osir. Now what does that mean? Smadar, Rashi points out, Smadar Osir Anovim Kevan Shenafal HaPerach V'chol Gargir Nira La'atzmo Karui Smadar. The Kam Rabbi Yossi Kevan Shebalich La'os Smadar Karui Pri V'osim Mishum Arla. So we'll say the Gemara now suggests that Rav Nachman holds like Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi holds that even once a fruit reaches its early stage of maturation, Smadar is considered to be the early stages of blossoming of the pre. That's already called a pre. Therefore, according to this logic, if you're calling something a pre at such an early stage, as long as the husk, the protective shell, is there at the time of smadar, so then what? We call that a shomer lepri, even if it falls off afterwards. Upligi rabbanan ale, and the rabbis argue on this. Rashi points out, upligi rabbanan ale. So Rashi points out, upligi rabbanan ale, v'halochi kirabim, hilchach evyonos vosha kafisin bahen lav peirininu, v'lo mikri kafisin shomer lepri. So what's interesting, the rabbis disagree on this, and the rabbis hold that ultimately, the only time a pre is considered to be a pre is when it reaches a fuller state of maturation, and therefore the only time that a shomer is considered to be a shomer is when the husk or the shell remains with the pre, even in an advanced stage of maturation. Is this argument only related to the caper bush, or is the argument related to other fruit trees as well? So the Gemara says, at what point in time is there a restriction to cut down fruit trees in the Shemitah year? So we'll say what this is referring to over here is the following. The Torah says that during the Shemitah year, the only thing you're permitted to do is what? Is eat. You can eat the fruits, but you're not permitted to destroy the fruit trees. So the question then becomes, leaving aside the general restriction of destroying fruit trees, at what point in time does that restriction set in? Or in other words, at what point in time is something called a fruit tree? So Beishamai Omrim, Kol Ha'ilonos Mishiyotziu. Beishamai says, as soon as the tree begins to port forth any semblance of fruit, as considered to be a fruit tree. Beisilo holds that a more advanced stage of maturation is necessary. Hacharuvin mishi yishrushu. So, hacharuvin. So apparently, the carob trees mishi yishrushu. Rashi points out over here mishi yiruban kamin sharsho shacharuvin. When they begin to grow chains of carobs. Hagifanim mishiyigru. When it comes to the vines, mishiyigru. When the grapes become large. Hazisim mishianitsu. The olives, when they begin to sprout their flower. Ushaar kol ha'ilonos mishiyotziu. And all other trees, when they really begin to put forward fruit. Va'amravasi hubosar hugarua hupul halavan. And Rav Asi says, this advanced stage, this is bosar, garua, pula, lavan. That these terms are all interchangeable. Meaning, as opposed to smadar, which is an earlier stage of fruit maturation, bosar is when the fruit is really ripe. So this word bosar, garua, pula, lavan, all refer to this advanced stage of fruit maturation. So the Gemara says, pula, lavan. Pula lavan literally means a white lentil. So what is that talking about? Pula lavan saladaitcha ele'ima shi'uro kapul halavan. That ultimately, what is the size of maturation that is considered to be that a fruit is fully developed when it's at least the size of this white lentil? Man shamisli the amar boser in smadarlo. Who is one who tells us that a fruit is only considered to be a fruit once it reaches the stage of bosar, advanced maturation, but not smadar? So the Gemara says, Rabbanon. This is the rabbis Vikatoni Shar Kol Ha'ilonos Mishiyotziu. Ela Omerava Hecha Amrinan Dahavi Shomer Lepri Hecha Dechi Shaklis Leil Shomer Mayis Peira. When do we call something? When do we consider that something is a real bona fide Shomer to the Pri? Only when what? When you would take away the husk, the Pri would die. Hacha kishak lislei lo mayis pera. Halacha lemaisa, here when it comes to the caper bush, if you were to remove the husk, the fruit would not die. That's indicative of the fact that what? That the husk is not considered to be a real shomer to the pri. So the Gemara says, Hava uvdo v'shaklu l'neitz terimona, v'yabish rimona v'shaklu l'pircha, so the Gemara says there was an episode where, well, take a look at Rashi for just a moment, Rabbi Osai. So the Gemara says there was an episode where they went ahead and, yeah, let me just read the Hava Udo Vashaklo Lanates Rimona. They took away the nates of the Rimon, and the Rimon dried up. Vyavashimuna. Vishaklua Lapircha de Batisa, they took off the perach, the shell of, Hirashi says, Batisa Ezevionos, of the caperberries, the Ikum Batisa. And ultimately, Halocha Lamaisa, the caperberry survives. Let's finish these parentheses. Vihilchasa Kimar Barav Ashi, the Zarek Ezevionos Vachala Sakafrisin, and Halocha Lamaisa, the Halocha follows Mar Barav Ashi, that we throw away the fruit and eat the husks, namely, that the orla restriction is Halocha Lamaisa, the only orla restriction only is on the fruit, but not on the shells. Umidilagabe arla lav peraninhu legabe brachos nami lav peraninhu velamavarchin alei brepria eitz elabrepria damas. Rabosai, bottom line, halacha lemaisa, it's good to know, when it comes to arla restrictions, the arla restriction only applies to the berry and not the husk, which tells us ultimately that it's only the berry that's the fruit, not the husk. If that's true for arla, it's also true for brachos. Therefore, on the berry itself, you'll say, avarepria eitz, but on the husk itself, if you eat it, which it is edible, you only say Brei Priya Adam. That's the most simple.